Hello, this is your host, Paul Harvey. I've been working diligently today to get a two-hour podcast with a presidential candidate called Harvey Wizard into a format that is listenable, because we were talking for 2 hours and seriously covered a lot of subjects. But I failed. I can't do it in the time available. So I'm going to re-release something for you this week. And the show that I've selected is with Adam Duran. Now, his story is like novel worthy, because he was a tearaway youngster. He ended up in the ministry. He ended up getting married. How do you do that from the ministry? Good question. He ended up in law enforcement, and his wife became a drug addict. Here is just an amazing story. It's a really, really well worth listening. Anyway, I will let my younger self tell you more about it. Hello, this is your host, Paul Harvey, at Life, Passion and Business. I realise I put this at the end of the programme most of the time, and I also realise I don't often listen to the end of podcasts. So I thought I'd better tell you here before we get started. So the first thing is, this podcast is not supported in any way. We have no sponsorship. So if you would like to support us, do check out the Buy Me a Coffee link on this podcast app, and you'll also find it at the website. Okay, before I take you to the podcast, I want to give you a little bit of a reminder about the power of focus and accountability. This is the one tool that will really get you towards the goals you are seeking, towards the path you want to take. So listen to the end to find out more, or check out the link in the show notes. Anyway, let's get you back to the podcast.
It's not by default, but by design. So if you want to get to the top of the mountain, you have to actually put some effort. You have to have some form of plan and be tenacious.
Yes.
And you can be at the bottom and stay at the bottom by accident, by doing nothing, but you'll never get to the top and live the life that you actually were designed and ordained to live, and or myself, until you start to understand that it comes with intentionality.
Our story today is about finding purpose and living it, because sailing the waves of life without direction or rudder is a hard journey. My guest with me today is Adam Duran. He was the youngest sibling in his family and always felt like the underachiever. That pattern of failure was repeated at school and on into high school, where trouble became his middle name. So he left high school without graduation, and his life was on a road to nowhere. Now, when Adam was a young teen, he and his friends did not see much future in the life for him beyond the age of 25. Both a little bit sad and actually quite dark, really. As always with these stories, the universe offers a hand. During his high school years, Adam's father rediscovered his faith and encouraged all of the family to attend church. So at 18, out of school, without graduation, and life looking so bleak, somehow the church called him. That's right, this tearaway lad was called to theological college, and he had a plan, and it was ministry. It's fair to say that plan did not run straight, but it was an adventure. Adam built a life that his 15-year-old never thought was possible. And while at college, he met a girl, and they had a child. He got into law enforcement as she became a drug addict. Yes, it has all the twists and turns of a good TV drama. Our conversation is lively and passionate. It's about faith and how it was tested and how he came through the tough times. It's about living with meaning, purpose, passion, and getting what you want. For Adam, it was always about purpose and focus. And with hindsight, he can now see why his original plan for ministry became a 30-year career in law enforcement, because that was where he could be the most effective minister. It was about supporting those whose life has begun like his, but did not have the breaks that he had. Adam is now retired from law enforcement, and he's moved on to his second career as an author, writer and speaker. He's taken his skills from ministry, law enforcement and fitness, and written a book called Live Life on Purpose. So let's join the conversation with Adam Duran. What's the story for you? Where did it all begin?
The story goes back as a child, where I lacked a sense of self-confidence, mm-hmm. and a belief in myself. I was the youngest of my family by at least a few years of my brother, my sister, even all my cousins. I was considered the baby of the family. So no matter what we got involved with whether it'd been sports or whether it'd been anything, I always felt less than I just wasn't as good as them. You know, they're 10, 12 years old, and I'm 7 years old, and I wanted to be good at something, and I could never meet their expectations, at least my expectations on their level.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize at the time that that it was just because I was so young, and I didn't have that began my journey of not being good enough, feeling that feeling of lack of belief in myself.
It must be tough being the bottom end of the family, actually, especially when if everyone's good achievers as well. It must be quite difficult from that respect. Whereabouts were in the world? Where were you living?
So I'm from San Jose, California, Northern California. People would know it as the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose. And one, just to maybe some a bit of where I'm at, people would know this. Down the street from me is Apple, Google, and HP.
Oh, a few little companies then.
And Facebook. And Facebook is right down the street from me. Yes, all within 20 minutes, 25 minutes of me right now. Is all the heads of the corporation.
So I'm guessing I'm guessing real estate in your area is a bit expensive then.
to say the least.
What about you? So you obviously were brought up in this sort of area, and you obviously, as you said, you had a difficult upbringing in terms of that you were surrounded by high achievers.
Yes. And so that kind of began my journey, and I was trying to find something that I was good at as a youngster.
Yeah.
And it didn't come with schoolwork, and it didn't come with sports. And again, I didn't understand at the time it was because of my youth or my lack of what on the same plane as my family, my cousins, even my brother and my sister. So I began to hang out and getting some attention. They were getting positive attention. And I felt like I wasn't getting the attention that I needed or wanted. I thought I needed and definitely wanted. So in the positive sense, then I started going to the negative. And not do my schoolwork, hanging around kind of the wrong crowd. And that set the journey for my youth. So in junior high school, so I end up hanging around the wrong crowd of the gangsters of the neighborhood. And I end up picking up a assault charge as a 13-year-old. So before I even hit high school, I was on probation with the police for assault. From there, the wrong crowds. And they said, hey, if you don't get in any trouble for the next 2 years, we'll expunge your juvenile record. Well, I continued not getting in trouble, but continuing my troubled behavior.
I mean, did you get better at not getting caught?
I got better at not getting caught.
Oh, well then, yeah. Okay. So there was some progress then. You were making some progress.
Unfortunately, in the negative way, but yes, I was making progress. So from there, of course, my schoolwork suffered. When I got into high school, which is the ninth grade, I remember my first semester, I had 5 F's and 1 D.
Wasn't accolade. That must have taken some work to achieve those.
The D was in PE, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So, again, the wrong crowd. And, of course, going through high school, hanging around people just like me, because there are others like me, and compounded the negative.
Well, the reality is here for the so many, but it just goes to prove that education doesn't work for everybody. And what is, it's not just about you failing, the system failing you from going down there, because it's like, you know, you can tell someone as much as you like, but you've got to find somewhere of inspiring them to change rather than trying to tell them to change.
That, Paul, that is so, so true. So I began to fall between the cracks of my high school, of the community, fall between the cracks. And of course, the behavior continued, wrong crowds, wrong everything. And I didn't graduate because there's no way I could graduate. But they kept me in school for almost 4 years, and didn't graduate. And but about that time, my dad would start to go to church. He found a purpose in his life a few years prior to that. He made everybody go to church. And so I rebelled from that. I didn't like being made to do anything. But about 18, I said, this life is not working for me. This is not happening. There were some breakups with some kind of girlfriends type thing. And I was just feeling really low.
So
and
just you know, what happens when you leave school without graduation in the States? I mean, is that a particularly difficult situation to be in?
So what I did is I was never shy of working.
Okay.
I never shied away from actually work. So I started working when I was 14.
All
Prior
right.
to that, I had been working throughout, part-time and going to school, because my dad, he pretty much say you need to get a job even at 14 years old. It's a little different now, but you still can do certain things. So at 18, when I didn't graduate, the first thing I did is my dad said, "Hey, if you're not working and if you're not going to school, you're going to work full time. You work full time, you're going to pay rent." There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I knew I had to get myself in order. So then I didn't graduate, but I did the equivalent to a high school diploma, and it's called a general education degree. And so, right, like on a Friday, I stopped going to school. Monday and Tuesday was 2-day process. I took the test and passed it. And then by that Thursday or Friday, I had a full-time job lined up already. So it was very quick. My dad was a no-nonsense kind of guy. We knew it. My brother and sister, we all knew it. So then I started working full time, and then went to church, and I said, maybe there's something to this. Then I had like a conversion, not a like, I had a conversion, and I found something that bigger than me, that I can believe in, and that with God I can do more things. I can so it gave me a sense of confidence in myself, living for something again bigger than me, and from there end up eventually going to college, which changed my life because I changed my environment, I changed my friends, I changed began transformation of how I believed of what I can do and what was possible,
Yeah.
and therefore my life began to change at that point.
So, what were you doing? I mean, I mean, obviously, you're working generally, but when you went to college, what did you go and study?
I studied the Bible.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I studied the Bible because
So
I got
you went to theological college.
yes, I did. I got very passionate about it, and I was always not shy of speaking, as you might be able to say. I enjoy speaking, I enjoy communicating, I enjoy the reciprocation. Always got in trouble in school for talking too much to my friends and that sort of thing. So I went to school for public speaking, which is kind of evangelism, and of course studying the Bible. Those friends from all over the country, if some of them around the world, different mindset.
So, what does
Well,
theological college teach you? I mean, it studies the Bible. I mean, is it primarily around Bible study?
yes. So, no matter what major you chose, which mine was evangelism, Bible would be a minor. So you could you it would always Bible was the minor. So
Of
you would
course.
always study the Bible. So we actually went to church like 6 days a week, and twice, sometimes twice a day.
Well, you're going to a theological college.
Yes, so we studied that, and again, I had never really read a book prior to going to college. I was if I'm going to do a book report, I just turn to the back and plagiarize basically, and just kind of summarize the book. And
I
I thought that
wonder
was a
how different is theological college from being going into a monastery?
So I don't know the monastery. To be honest with you, I think a monastery is more like Catholicism and really separating yourself from. We didn't separate ourselves. I think we were still.
Okay.
I think the monastery is more of
Monastery is
separation.
an internal journey, isn't it?
Yes.
When you go into cloister, it's an internal journey. So going
I
to
think.
theological college is about being is about taking it out there.
Yes, and getting out to the world, and us transforming, and us learning and understanding the Bible and other books, commentaries, and related to in church history. So from that point, my friends from all over the country, they kind of saw me as a bit of a project. Because they knew I was kind of, they thought, and they rightly so, from the other side of the tracks was me. And a lot of them grew up in church. I didn't grow up in church, so I was still rough around the edges. So they wanted to
Yeah,
help
I
me.
know, but it has the right feel about it in some respects, because it's like because you know the dark side, you when you come out when you come onto that, you understand people in that on that journey.
Yes.
You can only understand people if you walked in their shoes on some level.
And so, like, they enjoyed helping people. So I always got to the project, and I didn't know what a term paper was. And my first sitting down, my first day of class in college, I had five term papers to do by the end of the semester on the syllabus and
Wow.
the different class. I was taking 17 credits. I'm like, what is going on here? I don't even know what term. I thought it was a book report. They all helped me, and they helped me to study, and I began to understand and feel like I enjoyed learning.
How long were you in theological college for?
just about 3.5 years.
That's a serious commitment of time.
Yeah. So I was coming home in the summer times and Christmas times, but I was there from September to December.
All right. Did you fund this yourself?
No, my dad did. My dad funded it. Yeah. So I went 2,000 miles. I had never been on a plane before when I left to college. So I went over 2,000 miles away across the country. And I landed in a place that, oh my gosh, I'd never really been out of California, hardly. And now I'm in a Louisiana, like kind of the sticks there. You know, I wasn't afraid to try things, although I was afraid, but it wouldn't stop me from moving ahead to what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And when I was passionate about it, and there, that started the journey of really leveling up on a life that I didn't think I could ever have. Because as a youngster, I remember talking to my friends as 15-year-old kids. Honestly, it's kind of dark, but we didn't see ourselves like kind of living past 25. We're like, oh, and we thought it was funny. A lot of immaturity and a lot of just didn't see the future in a bright way. But here I am now. I'm going to college. I'm around other college graduates, and most of my professors were doctors in, you know, theology and various PhDs and that sort of thing. And I'm around this mindset that these guys, it's a fertile ground for learning and being challenged. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of one of the things that I started to do a little bit of running at that point. You know, like they required us in a very high way. We could not have our hair a quarter inch past our ears. We had to exercise. This was all part of the curriculum. So it was a very disciplined lifestyle, and it helped me to, you know, to set the stage as a foundation late in the game, as far as you would think I would have it as a youngster. But there were stages in my life that added to where I'm at today. And that was a big part of it. Yes.
So when you're obviously there for 3 or 4 years. So when you left college, what's the plan now to theological college? What are the options in front of you to go and do?
So the plan was to go into the ministry. That was my plan.
Yeah.
But right around second or third year of college, although I did go on the third year, year on the summer break, I met a girl.
And as you do.
As I did.
Hormones raging there.
yes, indeed. I think I was 20 years old, 19, 20 years old. And it was a girl that a lot of people didn't think she was kind of right for me, and they came at me in such a way that were trying to force me, and I did not like being forced. So it drove me harder towards her. And she was from the other side of the tracks as well, maybe a little bit more so than me. And that set the stage for our life. I got married when that was in the summer of second, third year. I got married between third and fourth year of college and took her back with me. We were going to go into the ministry together. We began to work in another state. After that, I left college because we kind of, you know, the family was not really supportive, and I, you know, rightfully so. So they basically, hey, you want to do it on your own? You want to be an adult, which is all good, but now you're going to have to support yourself. She became pregnant. Well, very quickly, it hit me that I ran out of money. We came back to California where I live because we didn't have a lot of support. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. Well, I got the job in law enforcement. She ended up in a bad situation. After got that job, she began to get into drugs, hanging around some family members that were less than.
And you're in law enforcement and she's in drugs.
You talk about heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You talk about being heartbreaking and just a sense of, I have no idea what I'm going to do. My life is just in shambles now. And next thing you know it, she's in the facility, the custodial facility jail I was working at. She's being booked in with charges of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That set another stage for my life. We had a child together. We just had a child. Didn't know what I was going to do. And you talk about, if I had ever been depressed, I look back at, I was depressed.
I guess that must also reflect on you if she's been caught for drugs, mustn't it? In law enforcement, everyone was looking at you a bit shady, like, well, okay. So what's your story then?
Absolutely. Like, hey, he's with her. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they weren't saying that.
But they were thinking it, that's for sure.
You talk about being just beat down, like emotionally, mentally. I remember this. This is a true story. I was like, I can't gather my thoughts. But I remember the taste to food was bland. No matter what I ate, it just felt like it had no taste. And the color, and I go back, this has been almost 30 years ago. but it's very vivid to me. I remember the colors I was looking at all looked the same. Although I could differentiate, it felt like the colors were the same. The food was bland. I couldn't sleep. And I think I definitely was looking back. I'd never been like that before and have never since. But I think I was in a form of depression because I didn't know what to do.
How did that test your faith? Because you've come out of theological college. You've met this woman who obviously attracted at the time. And suddenly, yeah. You know, between you, a curveball has been completely thrown. And it's like, did you question it at all? You're like going,
ooh. Well, I just felt like the funny thing, not funny in a funny way, but the interesting thing about it, I remember almost physically in pain.
Yeah.
I'm feeling a sense of like my stomach was in knots. And I remember laying there just like, I can't take this anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do. And then because I had my faith so strong that even though I was like, God, what is going on here? But I go back to scriptures that I memorized that I would never be put through something that God can't bring me out. No matter what I gone through, I knew I can come out because I had that sense that I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, I remember literally laying there. It's so vivid to me. I remember the floor I was in the room I was in at the house at the time, almost 30 years ago, thinking, God, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know how much more. And I said, but I know one thing. If you're with me, I know I can get through this. Somehow I can't see it, but I know that I know as long as you don't leave me, somehow I'm going to get through this.
Yeah.
And even though it took time and it was horrendous, it was just torturous and treacherous. What I was going through that I felt I was trying to help her. And I just felt like it was for naught because she did not want to be helped. She, you know, a person is an adult. They're going to make their own decisions. And I was like, I don't know what to do. Please, I'll take you back. I will help you. I'll send you to rehabilitation. And here I go, having to go to work. And last thing, I can go on and on, but I remember, this is a very dark time of my life. I remember, I'm working in a jail facility. And I'm working with some of the worst, a couple of them. I'll say one person in particular. There were all the inmates. He's basically multiple murders. He was almost a gang leader of a notorious gang in California still today. I don't even want to mention the name, but he was in that gang. And I remember looking at him. I'm working nights, 6 to 6, 6 at night to 6 in the morning. And I remember looking at him almost in a sense of not admiration, but like almost wanted to trade places with him because I was hurting so bad. I was like, it must be nice. I had the wrong perspective. I didn't say this to him, but I'm thinking he gets to sit there. He gets fed. He doesn't have to deal with the things I'm dealing with right now. And he gets up, he goes to sleep. And I'm like, almost like putting myself in that place of mind, which was a very dark place. Like, I just want to get out of this pain. I don't want to hurt no more. It was so bad. Mm. And to think like that, like it almost would be nice to be in jail. Not to do bad things, but the hurt was so bad. I just wanted to escape from it. But I remember that time, but that set the stage for my life. And like, okay, now I got through this. And again, this was all a process. It wasn't overnight because there was court. I'm having to battle for my child, my son her mom has helped her to try to garner, get the child to her. And I'm like, and it was just a whole slew of things. But if I didn't have family, if I didn't have my faith in God, because I felt so dark, who knows what, I don't know what it would, and the support of my family, my mother, my father, I had a good brother, sister, my family were amazing. And my friends were amazing. They all felt bad for me, believe me. They didn't tell me everything, but I'm sure they probably like, this poor dude, this poor guy. Even I had some bad influence and bad friends. I remember one in particular said, hey, Adam, we heard about what's going on. We feel terrible about it. And he's still not, you know, doing what he should be doing. So I hear, but he told me, hey, you know, if you ever need anything from me, we can help. I might be able to have some friends that might be able to help you. If you ever go through like doing something bad to somebody else. And he implied it. He didn't say it. And no. I didn't ask.
No.
I said, okay, well, hey, thank you for that. Cause he goes, we feel terrible for you. But all that said, it set the stage for my life to really level up again and continue. This is all that was my, this is, has been my journey. My journey has been long. And then, you know, of course, with the probation, not finishing school, but yet having a 30-year law enforcement career, promoting to the level of administrator of my department, which is a large department, one of the largest departments in the United States.
Right.
So it's not some hokey dokey podunk county. We're the county that houses Google, Facebook, all those people. So it's a big county. So I rose to that level because of my belief and my confidence. It was kind of failing after failing, but still climbing and
not just
up.
Your belief and confidence, also your competence. You must have been good at what you were doing.
When I began my law enforcement career, I didn't see myself, because I wanted to go into the ministry. I didn't see myself. It was paying the bills and paying it, you know, pretty well, thankfully. And it was kind of the best thing as far as job I had ever had to pay that kind of money to me. And so, but I didn't want to be there too long because I was not in the ministry.
No.
However, through that time, I may have been the 5 years, 10 years. And all of a sudden, like I said, there was still struggle to go to work. But after about 10 years of working, I said, I always enjoyed people. So I worked around people like my other officer buddies. I enjoyed them. I enjoyed the staff. And so it was always the community, the sense of teamwork. And so that really helped me too. But through it all, I began to change my perspective and really appreciating my job. And, you know, immaturity, at first you don't appreciate everything, but after a while you begin to appreciate my perspective change. And all of a sudden I got better at it. And better at, because if you find something you actually like doing, you're going to put more work in.
You will.
Than the other people who struggle to get there. Because I enjoy doing this, I'm going to put more work in.
I'm interested here because you were passionate about the ministry.
Yes.
You were passionate about serving God for the ministry. And then you went into law enforcement. So what was the passion in law enforcement for you?
So I always enjoyed, again, people. So now I got a sense of kind of the ministry without actually ministering to them.
Yeah, I guess you did. I guess it is really, isn't it? It's not that dissimilar, is it really?
Yeah, I'm going into this and I'm in a module. These are modules, jail facility of 64 criminals. Some of them pretty extensive.
Well, of course, you know, you meet all sorts in these places. I mean, some of them have done bad things.
really bad things. So, but I got a sense of, you know, I felt like valued because I'm able to help them with mindset and I'm able to help them, even though I didn't read the books I was doing, I actually believed it.
Also, it's easy for me to say this now. And it's easy for me to say, you know, people like them weren't born like that. They were made like that. Their circumstances created the situation they're in. Did you recognize that as a police officer? Or did you
absolutely. Absolutely. There were some officers that came from a background of not being around any of them.
Hmm.
I kind of grew up around that, those type of people. I began my life as that kind of person, the probation, not finishing school, rebellion. So I related to these people. And I knew if I can do it, they can do it. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't really preach to them. And if they ask me, I can tell them, but I can't, you know, it wasn't that kind of job. So you have to help them, but then you have manipulation in there. And so you have to be careful. I had to, you know, so I felt that I added value because when people would see me even out here in the streets, out in the outside, not in the custody environment. And if I would see some of the people, they would say, they'd call me by my last name. Hey, Duran. And I'm like, hey, how are you doing? They go, hey, I'm doing better now. Because they would always, I always say, you can do this. I'm always trying to motivate and hopefully inspire somebody with my story that, hey, we may not all have come from the same background, some worse than others. I didn't come from a bad background. My family was good, although we were around some not so good environment sometimes. But my brother, my sister didn't really do what I did. I did. It was really the mindset. You could separate yourself from those people, but if you felt like me, a lack of confidence, you went with the other kids that had a lack of confidence. We fed off each other. Yeah. So when I went in there, so I felt like over the years, I was kind of actually ministering to these people. I was helping them hopefully become a better person, hopefully become a better family member.
Proof of that because they said that you met them in the street and they said they were getting better. So obviously you were doing something very successful there.
So I do hear it even now. I've been retired for a year now, and a 30-year law enforcement career, just shy of 29 plus. I still hear it. I still
So what
hear
was that
people.
like walking out of that job into nothing? What was that like?
I'll be honest with you. That it was not easy because you really, what do I do now? Yeah, the pain you, but I'm so structured that in disciplined lifestyle, I get up early and I began, well, for the academy back in 1990 when I started my journey. It didn't start till 92, but 90, I began to run, jog, and for the academy to get ready for the rigorous academy that we were going to endure. It wasn't as rigorous as I thought it would be, but it was like a boot camp. So I did not want to fail. I tell you what, sometimes in my life, I look back and think, it's not so much that I want to get to that goal. I just do not want to fail, which drives me to get to that goal even harder. So I don't accept failure. Although, because as a child, I felt like I failed. So now I do everything I can that in my mindset, failure is not an option. It's not an option. I don't even leave it on the table. I burned my boat, even though I sometimes question. I said, I will not fail at this. So I began to get that mindset, develop it. It was took years, and I began jogging, and throughout the time, get to my law enforcement career right before I retired. I began a year prior to me retiring, and I began planning, and not only have goal setting, but planning. A goal without a plan is just a wish, and that's a fairy tale. It's not going to happen. You got to have a goal and have some kind of implementation plan to be able to get to the goal. So for me, prior to retiring, I started, well, I may retire. I might retire. So what am I going to do? I started dabbling what I'm going to do. I'm not much of a TV watcher. I love books. I fell in love reading books years ago. I read literally 7 days a week. Warren Buffett says, skip a meal, but don't skip your daily reading. And I literally, there may be 99%. Maybe there's one time I don't do it. It's very, very rare. I want to have that information. I want, you know, I believe that if you come across a person of rare intellect, Ralph Waldo Emerson, you need to ask that person, what books are they reading? Mm-hmm. Because that's where it comes from. So prior to that, started to think, what will I do? Now I have nothing to do. I need to have a sense of purpose. So I've always enjoyed conferences, trying to help young people. And I'm thinking, how best to help all people, even the people in custody, the children. I thought politics. And I thought, well, half the people love you, half the people hate you. It's hard to move the needle on a big ship, you know, on a big government. It's hard to move it. So I thought, well, no, that's not what I want. And all of a sudden, the book idea came to me. And I said, okay. I started dabbling. What did I do to find out how to write a book? I actually Googled it. How do I write a book? That's where the journey started. No one told me. I didn't know anybody writing books. How do I write a book? And I started calling, doing my due diligence. Next thing you know it, it led me to a company, and they kind of led me and gave me the tools necessary to be able to do the book. And so that was 1 month prior. It was several months prior, but 1 month prior, I actually started writing the book, June of 2021. July of 2021 is when I retired after almost 30 years. From June 21 all the way to June 2022, just 3-4 months ago, the book was complete in about a year's time, probably within days of each other. It wasn't planned that way. I had planned to write it in 4 to 6 months, but because I had to read the revisions, I had to rewrite it. It didn't sound right. I actually gathered a team with me of like-minded people to help me to really condense it, to get the best book possible, because I believe that if I'm going to do something, I'm not going to halfway it. I'm going to do everything I can to make it the best, and I've done it. Now, okay, so now got the book done. Was it? It's contingent. What does a person want to do with the book? Is different for everyone.
What's the book called? I mean, I can see it on this video, but obviously for the benefit of my listeners, what's the book called?
So the book is called Live Life on Purpose.
Okay.
From Running the Streets to Running a Beat.
All right.
And everything on there is twofold. Live life on purpose is you have to have something to shoot for, some purpose, right? And you have to be purposeful or intentionality to be able to live that purpose. And from running the streets to running a beat, running the streets is twofold as well. Back when I was a young kid, I was running the streets in a bad way, but then it became a marathon runner. So from running the streets to running a beat, the beat is law enforcement. We call it a beat.
Yeah.
So that is what the book's called. And now the book's complete. Now what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give back. So a portion of every book sale is going to the Boys and Girls Club of America.
Wonderful.
So I need to give back because that is where I find that brings me fulfillment to be able to reciprocate everything that I've been given to give to others. My experience, my failures, my challenges, and then my successes. Because I believe it's fundamental, really, for everyone, and we all different environments, but we all kind of, you know, these are the seasons of life: the winters, the summers, the falls, the springs. We all go through these seasons, the ebbs and flows. But it's in the downtime, I believe, is when the growth happens.
Yeah.
It's if you want to get stronger. If you're a weightlifter, you want to get stronger. You have to add more weight or reps. So you have to add some resistance to it, and that's where the strength begins. And with the mindset, with the body, with the emotions, and with everything in life, that's the growth period.
So what does life on purpose, living life on purpose mean for you?
I believe living life on purpose is, like I said, for me is this purpose. And that is living the life that I feel that I was actually designed or ordained to live. Mm-hmm. That's the life. And in a very productive and a meaningful way. Because I believe somebody can have a purpose, but the wrong purpose. Believe me, I've worked with 30 years with people that had the wrong purpose. Some of them wanted to be leaders of the gang. I don't believe that's productive in any shape, form, or fashion. However, having a purpose in a meaningful way and productive way, and that is living the life that you believe you were. Now, I'll say this, and it's not a money thing. It's, hey, if the, say, a wife and a husband and wife relationship, if the wife wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, wife and mom, then I believe she's living life on purpose. She's living life in a productive and meaningful way in her realization of that.
Yes.
And I believe that is a successful life. And so now that I'm living this life on purpose and intentionality, that everything I'm doing now is I'm having to think this through. Because I believe that you don't get there by accident. You get there by design. It's not by default, but by design. So if you want to get to the top of the mountain, you have to actually put some effort. You have to have some form of plan and be tenacious.
Yes.
And you can be at the bottom and stay at the bottom by accident, by doing nothing. But you'll never get to the top and live the life that you actually were designed and ordained to live, and or myself, until you start to understand that it comes with intentionality.
Wow, that's really clear. Thank you. So how do you define success? I mean, you said you've had successes. I mean, do you have a definition for success for you? Are you?
Sure. Yeah, I believe that this my life's journey has had successes and yet challenges and failures.
Mm.
But even the failures can add value to your life because mm-hmm. you learn what not to do. So like, okay, now I won't do that again. And I'll do this better because that didn't work out. So the life that I've had, I do believe overall success is really, and finding fulfillment is loving relationships with God, with yourself, and with your family and or friends and community, and having that life of gratitude and giving back. So I do believe success in life takes different forms and over time, over your life. So I believe someone could be successful in something, but then, okay, so I was successful at my job. Well, now I don't have that anymore. There has to be some course correcting. Now what am I going to do? And I believe that some people reach the pinnacle of success, maybe financially, maybe in promotions, and maybe in their family, but now they don't have that anymore. Now what do they do? So a deeper meaning even than that you had thought of before. And it may, so you're a successful parent and your children were small. Now they're big. Now they moved out of the house. Now what do you do? So, okay, so my job was there for 30 years. Now what do I do? So you have to find that thing that you believe fulfills you. And I have found that in myself in giving back, fulfillment, loving relationships. I want more friends. Well, I have to be a friend to get more friends.
Yes.
Do the things that necessary that friends do. And if you want to, you know, have great health, well, you have to have some intentionality. Great health rarely is by accident, rarely. I mean, you could say that there's those anomalies, but really great health comes with a lot of intentionality, kind of watching kind of what you eat over time and maybe getting some exercise, getting some vitamin D. So there has to be some intentionality to it. Great health, again, is by intentionality. And I really emotional, mental, and your relationships, it's healthy relationships. I believe that comes with intentionality. So that's the life I want to live now in it's an overall wellness. It's emotionally, mental. It's more than just the physical. It's more than just financial. I believe that success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. You took years to get to that goal and you find out that it was anticlimactic. It's like, oh, well,
that,
now
the problem,
I'm here.
I mean, that's what happens so often. That success, that's someone else's success quite often. That's what you're chasing.
I believe that. I believe that. And I believe you start be mindful to remain mindful. So I think a lot of people don't think this through. I thought your thoughts become things. Thoughts become things. So be careful what you think about. Be careful what you see. Be careful what you hear. And be careful who you're around, because they will influence you. You may have your goals, but if you're around other people that don't align with those goals, more times than not, you're going to begin to align with their goals, which could be a lack of goals. And then you forget your own self. So I think if you remain mindful, to stay mindful and be around others who feel the same way, you're going to work off each other. It's the compounding effect. And being consistent with that on a daily basis. Again, we're not all perfect. We have those ebbs and flows. There's sometimes I'm just not going to feel like it. I'm not going to feel like, but there's some things. This is a true story. This helps me in a big way. I do my best to live up to the promises, to meet the promises that I make to myself. And as I do that, my life, not only that, my mind begins to strengthen, but that my standards begin to rise. And what I thought I could do, I can actually do more now.
Wow.
So, and it's just, I think it's a bulletproof way. Even again, I get knocked down. And even I am a positive kind of guy overall. Maybe it's part of my personality, but I actually work on this. I mean, I literally, I take cold showers 7 days a week. Oh. So I'm not just sitting there.
Oh,
literally,
hate the cold showers.
And I do too. Believe me, there are times today, I've been doing this for 2 years, the cold showers in particular. I've been running for 32 years, but the cold showers, 2 years. And there are times still today that I struggle. I look at my shower and I think, I don't want to get in there today. I don't want to get in there. So, but I said, no, I'm going to keep the promises I make to myself. And when I do the things, discipline myself by its very nature is having you make yourself do the things you kind of don't want to do.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a past client used to say to me, he gets in the cold shower every day because that's the most difficult thing. If he can start the day with doing the most difficult thing he has to do, then everything else in the day will work be easy.
I believe that. And I fixed my bed. I never leave my apartment without first fixing my bed.
So that's very military of you.
Right. I start my day with a sense of accomplishment,
yes,
of a course. Win. And so if the day just turned out bad altogether and I come home, the day just didn't go well, it didn't meet my expectations, I came home, at least I got a fixed bed.
Absolutely. So look, let's move on. What about contribution?
So I believe my contribution and what I feel like I'm called to do is giving back to everything I've learned, everything I've been through, and adding, doing my best to contribute to the world, my community and beyond through my experiences and my successes, and not just my successes, because I want to be real with people. It hasn't always been roses and all those things. There's some times that have been tough, and I described one earlier, but there's other times like, you know, my dad passed a couple of years ago. It was tough for my family. But these are the parts of life that when you have good relationships, it makes the big difference, because they will be your foundation when you're going to need them. Whereas you don't have those and you're going to go through something. We all will. And if you don't have that support network, you're compounding the difficulty of going through that event. So my contribution is now helping others maybe avoid, and or if they're in it, to help them come out through what I know, what works for me. I know that they're actually proven to work, and I'm a living example, and I want to share those with others, not overwhelm somebody. I run marathons and have for many years, but I don't think everybody should.
How many marathons are you up to now then?
You know what? Honestly, Paul, I say between 50 and 100. I think it's probably 75 plus, but I don't count. The only ones I count is the four times Boston, two Boston marathons, four time Boston qualifier. Each I did it four times in a row.
Okay. That's contribution to the self, that's for sure.
Right. And then helping others in the healthy way, what's worked for me. I have literally not taken even a Tylenol in probably 4 years, not even one Tylenol. Now I'm not in any medication. I'm 56. I don't take any medication. I don't take any supplements. I'll take a protein shake once in a while. If I do a hard run, I think I need to start some things, but everything just seems to work. But again, this is all intentionality. You know, I try to get my sleep. I try not to overeat. I watch what I eat. I try to get my vitamin D. I'm around healthy relationships, healthy reading. I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't sit down a lot because I don't think it's good for my back. So it's like compounding. It's these little, it's kind of like inch by inch, it's a cinch. Yard by yard, it's hard. So doing those little things over time, compound, will add so much value. But those little things that you can do every day that anybody could do, they're so small to do. They're easy to do, but just as easy as those little things are easy to do, they're easy not to do because they're so small.
Yeah.
But compounded over time, it's going to either add value or take away value, devalue yourself. If you're compounding those little things, bad habits, you know, bad company will corrupt, will corrupt good character.
Yeah, so, of course.
You know, and then on the other side of that coin,
it's like that thing about little things. It's like, you know, the guys that you met in your correctional facility, they didn't start with the big stuff. They started with nicking stuff from small shops, and they progressed up, and the line gets constantly moved. And the same with everything else. When you start, you know, getting healthier, if you do a 5 minute walk today and do a 10 minute walk next week and tomorrow, and then everything about progression, isn't it? You just move the needle.
If everyone could be consistent and just start where they're at, you know, just start where they're at. And not compare themselves with me, you, Paul, or somebody else that they may look up to, but start where they're at. Over time, they will get a lot farther, either in a good, positive, or negative way. But if they start with healthy, positive habits that, one, get the goal, like, oh, I want to be healthy. And, you know, nobody wants average health. If you ask somebody, hey, do you want great health or average health? I don't think there's not one in 100. What's that? I just want average health. We all want great health, but we don't want to have to do something to get that great health or do everything we can. So now looking back, I want to add value to someone that's worked for me, not only me, but millions of other people today, living today and historically. So through my wisdom, with my experience and the knowledge I've garnered over the years, through health and wealth, not necessarily financially, but nothing wrong with that, by the way. But healthy relationship, having a wealthy life. And that's a wellness to me. That's a whole lot of the wellness approach to life. And that will bring you fulfillment because you got to look what really fulfills you. Why do you want what you want? Why do you want this? And when you start asking why, it really puts people on notice. Like, oh, well, they never thought of that before. So if you and I can ask those people or ask the questions of ourselves, then that will motivate us and keep us going. Like, I believe, why am I, you know, what am I doing? Well, I'm writing a book and I'm getting the book out there. I'm going on podcasts like yours, Paul. And then you could, okay, that's great. And well, why? Well, because I believe I was designed and ordained to do this. And by doing this, I believe that I can help so many people level up their life in the way they want to level up.
And even if you only help one person, it's enough, isn't it, really? Just one person moving because of what you've done.
So satisfying. Satisfying. That gives you more than money can ever give. It's such a
you'll probably do more, but just to know, I mean, that guy in the street that said to you, you know, hey, Duran, I'm doing better, you know, and that's just enough, isn't it, on some level?
Yeah, you know, it just feels so good. Just literally a week ago, I go to a restaurant and somebody calls me "Hey, Lieutenant." So I actually thought it was a former deputy that worked for me. "Hey, Lieutenant." And he waves to me, and I look back, and I'm thinking, I literally had probably 180 people that working for me. So a lot of people, I don't know
No,
everybody.
of
I
course
did my
not.
best to be personal with everybody, but I look back, I'm thinking, and I don't forget faces. I have a pretty good memory, and I'm like, I just waved to him, "Hey," you know, because he knew who I was. I'm like, I walked away. There was a lot of marijuana smell and other drugs that were when he opened the door. I'm like, "Yeah, that's not a deputy. That's not an officer." And that was a guy from jail that knew me. And he says, "I'm out here now." And I said, "Good for you. I don't ever want to see you in that place again," I told him. He says, I won't, Duran. I won't, Lieutenant." And I walked away. But you hear things like that. And then, you know, I look back and I say, you know what? They remember me for something.
I
You know,
do.
those 30 years, they remember a guy who tried to help them,
Yeah, I do.
motivate them,
I do.
inspire them. Because after I hadn't been in a while, and I was, you know, as a lieutenant, you're kind of an office kind of format. So I'm not in there with the fellas anymore or the gals. And so to remember me, he had to go years back, but he
He did.
remembered me.
He did. He did. He did.
That
So
feels so good.
look, let's move us on. What's the one question you want people to ask of themselves or ask you?
So I would, that one question is a very powerful question. And I would say, why? Find out why you are where you're, why are you, why you want what you want? Why are you doing what you're doing? And so that question there is so poignant and so deep. It's so like it's simple, but it's deep.
No,
So,
it's
well,
not simple because it's you get to why and you get an answer and then you get, but do I want that? But
yeah.
why do I want that?
That is the million-dollar question. And that can lead you to really start your journey and level up your life in a way that you only dreamed your life can level up.
Yes.
And nothing happens overnight. But when you ask those why, and then you might get to the why and say, you know what? I'm not going to do that anymore. Because why I'm doing this doesn't make any sense to me.
Now that's
Or
a value question, you see. When you get into why you don't like something, suddenly you realize it's about values. When you know your values, what you value,
so true.
then you suddenly realize that what you're doing doesn't fit your values.
It doesn't fit your values. And if you have a strong, so, you know, what you're doing, okay, I get it. But why you're doing this, you have to have a strong pull. You've said, "Oh, I'm doing it for the money." Well, I get that. And that's great and everything. And you have some ambition and that's a good goal. Okay. But why do you want the money? Why? And then you start asking why. You get down to the nitty-gritty. You have to have a strong, because I want to, and when the more money I have, the more I can give. The more money, the more people I can impact in a positive way. The more people I can keep out of that custody environment. The more I can help families. The more I can help the Boys and Girls Club of America fund them, because it's a funded, it's all donations. But the more book sales I get out there, the more I can help, because every book sale helps them.
Yes.
And why I'm doing it. So
You are
that's a
passionate
very
about
strong
that.
pull.
You're certainly passionate about that. I could certainly hear that in your voice. I mean, there's no doubt
So
about that
that's the why. And so that why gets me up. And there's sometimes I don't want to work on what I need to work on, but I remember the why and the
from
why I'm doing this. I said, "Oh, I have to do this because this is going to help families. This is going to help a child. This is going to help. This is going to help. I'm doing this because this is
Can you
what I was
say more a
designed
bit
to do."
about that charity? Because I've never heard of it before.
So the
What
Boys and Girls Club of America, it's a charity that's been started probably in the 1940s, 50. I have to look it up. It's been 60, 70 years. And so what that does, much of it is when it, a lot of it's towards the lower income, with kids that didn't, don't have a lot of opportunities, and then some parents that maybe single parents and they have to go to work, but the kid gets out at say 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock from school, and the parent is at work till 5. Well, what are they going to do? Well, they don't have enough money to get a babysitter, but what they could do is the child can go to the Boys and Girls Club and be there till 6 and have mentors and learn computer skills,
So it
you know.
basically gives them somewhere to go and stop them getting involved in the wrong company.
That's correct. And then, you know, there's sports, and then and there's they have leaderships and they have mentors, and it's great to see like a 12-year-old could be a mentor to an 8-year-old, and
Yes.
then the 14-year-old could be the 12-year-old. And so they have this leadership programs all over all 50 states, and I think it's in other countries as well. So that's, I'm saying, if there's ever a place, because you have, I think of such a value. That's the next generation. So if I can give back to them, they can learn the leadership skills, and they can add so much value to others and then to others. It's a compounding effect. Now, is it going to change overnight? No. But that one person that may hear from me or may read my book or the money that was funded, maybe the Boys and Girls Club wouldn't have enough money, but they had enough money for that parent to leave the child off, and the parent doesn't have to worry about the
Well, you
child.
don't know
They're in a
either, do
safe.
you? You don't know what the child will do or the parent will do. Each person could change the world we live in, so you never
Each
know.
person, you say one person with 7.5 billion, 8 billion people in the world. I know there's billions of us. And here's what I say. If you or I, if a person thinks that they're too small to make a difference, try spending the night with a mosquito.
Yes, absolutely.
That can actually ruin your day the
It
next day.
can. It can.
So you're no one is
Yeah.
too small to make a difference. And things, thoughts become things, and our contribution, how big or how small, it all adds value and compounding over time. And I believe that this is what I'm called to do, and that's why I'm doing it. And that's the Boys and Girls Club of America.
So
And they have so many things. It's so cool.
that's the book, Live Life on Purpose, by
Yes.
Adam Duran. You can find that, and we'll have links for that. How else could people get in touch with you?
So yes, through Amazon. It's on Amazon. And also I'm pretty active on Instagram, Adam dot underscore Duran. And so I'm pretty active on Instagram. I'm on Facebook as well. So if you go Adam Duran, and you can actually Google me, I'll come up. So Adam Duran Runner. I have a YouTube, actually have a YouTube account that I haven't put in a while, but it's called the Motivational Runner. There's like probably 200, 300 videos in there that I'm trying to motivate people to get out and exercise and move that body and just appreciate the body that they have. It's kind of use it or lose it. Everything in our life is kind of like a muscle.
It is.
Our emotional self, our mental self, our physical self. You use it or lose it. And you think, well, that's not really true. And the resistance, try lay down for 2 weeks and don't get up, and then after 2 weeks, get out of bed and see how it's going to feel
Well,
walking.
indeed, it'll be hard. Do you have a website as well?
Adam-Duran.com.
Lovely. Well,
Yes.
look, all those
So,
links will be available at the website Life, Fashion and Business. So do check it out. Do check it out on Amazon. Well, thanks, Adam, so much. We now get to the last question that we get on this podcast. What's the meaning of life? Because, what are we here for?
I believe the meaning of life really is relationships. Really, the relationships that we have not only with ourselves but with others. And if we can find meaning in that, in a loving relationship with ourselves, with God, with our families, friends, and our community, I think that's everything in life. Because the money will come and go, but what I know that there's an old I think quote from, they say, Lee Iacocca, who was a big business guy back in the day. He said, project yourself to your deathbed. And think of that time. What regrets would you have? Would you regret not spending more time in the office? Would you regret spending, this or that? Or would you regret not spending maybe enough time with your family, or not taking care of your health at the way you should have, or your friends, not valuing your friends and your community like you should? I think a lot of that would be coming back to loving relationships and giving back. Because when you give back, it's almost selfish to be unselfish, because when you give, you feel so good. It comes right back to you. So I believe that all of us can add value to other people through our own lives. And we all have a story. So I wrote a book, that's great and everything, but I believe everybody has a story, and a story worth telling. And
Absolutely.
we all have something to contribute to this world. And again, there's no one in this world that's too small to make a difference.
Well, Adam Duran, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been such a joy to talk to you and hear your story.
Paul, thank you very much. Have a wonderful day, and live life on purpose.
Will do. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Adam Duran. If you'd like to connect with Adam, you can find him at his website, adam-duran.com. He's on Instagram and on Facebook. And do check out the book, Live Life on Purpose, which you can find on Amazon. Now, all those links will be available at the website, lifepassionandbusiness.com. Okay, as I mentioned at the beginning, now is a time to discover how to find some more focus in your life and get things done. Okay, so we're all looking to move forward. We all want to find some measure of success in the world. And if you've heard the podcast, you know I have a view of success, but that's another conversation. But the point is, however you look at this, we want to get things done. You might want to get a project over the line. You might have a really big goal that you're looking to move forward on. And the problem is, whenever we start these projects, whenever we do anything like this, there's always some resistance. There's always something that gets in the way. And that can be a multitude of things. But the key to this is, how do we retain focus and stay with the project and push it over the line? And that's where focus coaching can help. Now, it's a process that I discovered some 15 years ago during my coach training, and it's something sometimes called focus coaching, turbo coaching, speed coaching. And it's a really simple process where we define what it is you're trying to achieve, and we look at the resistance that you're experiencing in that achievement, come up with some strategies to solve that resistance, commit to setting a date, and I hold your feet to the fire to make sure that you do that. So there's a commitment, there's an accountability process, and that's it. That's basically how it works. You get it done. And I can tell you, it is so powerful when you start working in this way, particularly when you work with someone who supports you in the process of doing it. And one thing to remember, you know, success is never guaranteed, but the struggle always is. And that's what this coaching is designed to do. It's designed to get you through the struggle towards the success you're looking for. So do check out the link on this podcast or at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. You will find a video of me again explaining this process. But if you go below the video, there's a booking link where we'll have a discussion about your project and how we could get you sorted. As always, if you have enjoyed this podcast, if you found anything here of any use, please share it with a friend, because that's how people like yourself find good podcasts. If you can, give us a review, give us a 5-star review. I have to ask for 5 stars. Why not? I think I'm worth it. When you support a podcast in that way, you have no idea how effective it is, both in terms of supporting us on the platform, but it also makes us feel good. Yes, it makes me feel good, and I like to feel good. As always, thank you for your time and attention. I will catch you next time.